What separates those who rise from crushing circumstances from those who remain trapped by them? For decades, psychology had a simple answer. Early trauma creates lasting damage, period. Then came Emmy Werner's startling discovery in Kauai. Tracking nearly 700 children from birth into adulthood, she found something that shattered conventional wisdom. About one-third of kids facing poverty, family dysfunction, and neglect didn't just survive, they thrived. They excelled academically, built successful careers, and developed into psychologically healthy adults. Similar patterns emerged worldwide. Children of schizophrenic parents who flourished, abuse survivors who became honor students. These weren't statistical flukes. They were tunnelers, people who somehow passed through barriers that should have been impenetrable. Consider Percy Spencer, orphaned at 7, forced to quit school before 5th grade to work in a mill. He taught himself advanced mathematics and science, eventually inventing the microwave oven. Or fashion mogul Eli Tahari, abandoned in Jerusalem orphanages, who arrived in New York with $3 daily, slept on park benches, and built a $500 million empire. What did they possess that others lacked? Not superhuman strength or extraordinary luck, but three specific qualities anyone can cultivate: an internal sense of control, unwavering commitment, and an even temperament under pressure. Picture two people facing a denied promotion. One blames external forces, a biased supervisor, office politics, bad timing. The other asks, "What could I have done differently?" Psychologist Julian Rotter called this locus of control, and it predicts academic performance, lifespan, even marital satisfaction. Those with external focus see themselves as secondary characters, buffeted by uncontrollable forces. Internals view themselves as primary actors, responsible for outcomes through their choices. When challenges arise, externals experience emotional volatility and helplessness. Internals maintain stability by focusing on what they can influence, asking, "What's my next move?" rather than, "Why is this happening to me?" Developing this internal perspective requires catching ourselves in external thinking and redirecting attention inward. Where are you in all of this? That simple question transforms adversity into meaningful action. Major Rami Harpaz refused victimhood as a POW. Rather than fixating on release beyond his control, he created meaning within constraints. In a cell with 9 others, he established a democratic system, organized lessons, built an Eiffel Tower from matches, and led translation of The Hobbit into Hebrew. These activities proved so fulfilling that one prisoner hesitated to leave when freed. This drive explains why zookeepers accept $24,800 annually, nearly 50% below average, despite 82% holding degrees. They view their work as a calling. Sociologist Robert Bella identifies 3 work types: jobs, income, careers, identity, and callings, passionate, meaningful work. Those with callings show higher self-esteem and less anxiety. Meaningfulness affects physical health. A 7-year study found older adults reporting high life meaning were 2.5 times less likely to develop Alzheimer's. We create meaning by surrounding ourselves with meaningful elements: family, volunteering, purposeful work, and embracing meaningful questions. While Americans equate certainty with meaning, cultures like Japan view exploration as lifelong. Finding meaning in small daily activities proves most powerful. Ruth Gordon graduated high school in 1914 when women faced limited career options. After spending her family's savings on acting school, she was told she wasn't suited to the stage. Rejected for an extra role, she showed up uninvited, resulting in public humiliation and banishment. Yet Gordon refused to surrender. Though it took 25 years to land her first film role, she persisted. In her 70s, she won an Academy Award for Rosemary's Baby. Her advice captured the tunneler mentality: never give up, and never, under any circumstances, no matter what, never face the facts. Dr. Suzanne Cabasa's research revealed that executives remaining healthy under stress shared tunneler characteristics: internal orientation, meaning-driven lives, and relentless commitment. Paul Wellstone demonstrated this running for Senate in 1990 against popular incumbent Rudy Boswitz, who had five times his funding. Wellstone bought a used green school bus to tour Minnesota, created creative television spots highlighting his underdog status, and turned Boswitz's debate avoidance into an advantage. He won by less than 3 percentage points. Psychologists Frederick Rodewalt and Joan Zone discovered tunnelers perceive hardships differently. While non-tunnelers rated 40% of life experiences as undesirable, tunnelers viewed only 27% negatively, making sustained commitment significantly easier under pressure. University of Georgia shortstop Kristen Schnake embodied calm under pressure during the 2009 World Series run, reminding tense teammates, "It's just softball, it's all it is." Her approach paid off. Georgia reached the semifinals, and Schnake hit 5 home runs after managing only 1 in her previous 204 games. NYU psychiatrists Alexander Thomas and Stella Chess identified 3 infant temperaments, difficult, slow to warm up, and easy, that generally persist into adulthood. An easy temperament serves as psychological armor against adversity. Tunnelers combine relentless drive with this easygoing nature, transforming how they experience challenges. After an IED blast mangled retired Major David Underwood's leg and crushed his arm, requiring amputation and 25 surgeries, he never asked, "Why me?" Instead, "Wow, I can't believe I lived through that." His commanding officer found him before another surgery saying, "Yes, sir, I'm fine. It's just an arm." For eBay CEO John Donahoe, even temperament's power became clear at Stanford Business School when, as a new father facing finals, he studied with a relaxed attitude yet earned top honors in all 5 courses. Despite fierce backlash during the 2008 financial crisis, he remained calm, ultimately tripling eBay's stock price. Australian psychologists studying 32 families under major stress found easy temperament was easily the most discriminating variable in childhood resilience. Adults can cultivate even temperament despite not being born with one. The challenge lies in overcoming the fear that without tension and worry, we'll lose control. In a 1990 experiment, students awaiting electric shocks who listened to comedy maintained anxiety at 2.7, while control groups reached 5.1. Laughter relaxes muscles, lowers blood pressure, and increases pain tolerance. Vietnam War POWs risked torture to share jokes through walls. One prisoner in solitary confinement found relief watching a guard fumble with an alarm clock. "I thought I was going to die today, and all I did today was have a good laugh." Emmy Werner noted resilient Kauai children often possessed good humor, while psychologist Ann Mastin found children skilled at understanding cartoons performed better academically and socially. Affiliative humor, funny stories and silly remarks, improves relationships, while aggressive humor, sarcasm and cynicism, damages them. Self-deprecating humor, appropriately used, reduces social distance and strengthens connections. A satellite, someone providing unconditional support, transforms lives. Ellen Fagenson's workplace research showed employees with satellites reported greater job satisfaction, recognition, and promotion rates. The key is unconditional, positive regard, support without agenda. Big Brothers Big Sisters exemplifies this. Volunteers spend quality time with children twice monthly without specific goals. Princeton's Jean Baldwin Grossman found BBBS children were 46% less likely to use drugs, 32% less likely to engage in violence, skipped school 52% less, and lied to parents 37% less than peers. The most effective satellites balance unconditional support with appropriate challenge. Pablo Pesmino demonstrated this with third graders, refusing to dumb down material, teaching anatomy with college-level terminology. By year 2, his once-struggling students mastered trigonometry and analytical geometry. Years later, as a spinal surgeon, Pesmino still receives letters from these students. His success came from balancing challenging expectations with genuine respect.